Daniel McIver is here. The name of the play is The Inheritance, Parts 1 and 2. After all these many, many years of following your career, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me about the play. And first of all, just how much is it, Part 1 and 2?
It's two separate, standalone things, but you really do want to experience both of them. It's the cumulative effect of both of them that is the show, that is the experience. The play, Matthew Lopez wrote this play based on Howard's End, the E.M. Forster novel, and he is inspired by and explodes the novel, but it's wonderful, kind of, there's all these little Easter eggs in it in terms of, oh, that's from Howard's End, or this name, or this moment, or this beat, or this umbrella, and so it's really fun to come in knowing, and not that you need to, but it's an added bonus when you know something about Howard's End. And E.M. Forster, so basically it's a group of, they're called Young Man 1, Young Man 2, right up to Young Man 10. So these 10 young men in New York trying to make a story. And E.M. Forster shows up and helps them tell their story. And part one is sort of getting all those pieces lined up. And part two is all those pieces working together. So Forster kind of leaves them alone. And in part two, the story takes over. And the story is really about, Lopez is trying to talk about a community, a queer community or a queer culture that has been decimated because of the AIDS crisis. So there's not a lot of men my age. I'm 61 years old. There's not a lot of elders in that community. And so it almost, I suppose, like similar to the generations where there were wars, you know, the young men are gone. And so the elders are gone. And so he's making a case about, how do we fill that space, and how do we continue an idea of a culture or a community that respects itself internally, but also acknowledges the impact it's had on the larger community?
It's interesting that the author's chosen to pay homage to Howard's End when Maurice was the actual gay novel, which was published posthumously because he didn't want to publish it during his lifetime.
Yeah, it's actually, I think in it, there's actually a bit of surprise from Forster, like the character of Forster himself is a bit surprised that they do that. There is a lot of conversation about Maurice inside it. But the thing about Howard's End is really interesting, and I didn't know Howard's End until I was cast, and I love it. It's such an amazing piece of work.
It's got one of my favorite lines. Close to the beginning, they say, they are men with their hands on the rope of the world.
I was writing down and underlining and highlighting, and it's like, now I look at the book and it's all underlined and highlighted. It's so much, so, so beautiful. But it really is interesting. It's really, you know, from an academic point of view, it's wildly queer in sort of that academic sense of what, you know, queer theory in terms of like reframing things. But it's also really progressive in terms of it's looking at the land and the way we think we own it. And it's looking at industrialization, and it's looking at capitalism in ways that it feels wildly current in terms of the conversation that it's having with society. And that's in the play too. There's some really interesting political conversations that happen in this play, disguised as brunches. It's really, really, like, you know, Lopez has written some amazing dialogue and some really important ideas hidden in sort of domestic disputes and so on. But there's a lot going, it's similar, that's what it's like Howard's End too, is that you see, on some level, you're watching these interactions between these characters, these middle class, upper middle class characters, and then suddenly you realize, oh no, we're talking about a society in a more broad sense.
And is it set in the present, or does it go through different time sets?
No, it's set very specifically around before and just after the 2016 American election. So it's reflecting on the...
Okay, that's kind of important.
Very important. The name is not spoken, but the candidate, they call him. It's a very particular moment in time that it's focused on in contemporary time.
You and I are not that far apart in age, and you've already said this impacts on this particular play, the absolute mortal terror of AIDS. in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, like that was the thing. And Brendan Healy, the director, and I, he's younger than me, but it was weird. The pandemic raised a kind of PTSD in a lot of us because it was, oh, wait a minute, this, I think, didn't we do this already? Like, but when we did it the first time, we were very unsupported in it. You know, it took a long time for the mainstream or the wider society to kind of acknowledge the fact that this wasn't something that we brought upon ourselves somehow, or, you know. So talking about that time now, there's a really direct experience for everyone who's around now to remember how upside down everything got.
Can I ask you, I don't want to be too personal, but I mean, how many of your contemporaries did you lose?
You know, a lot, like a lot of close friends, a lot of, you know, lovers and friends, but you felt the loss of people connected to people connected to people. And, you know, and Fran Lebowitz recently talked very interestingly about, we talk about all the artists we lost, but the audience we lost, a very particular kind of viewer was gone. And like, she's speaking specifically about Broadway, but, you know, I think that's sort of everywhere. It was a time when you felt like it was going to be you next. You kind of started living with that.
Do you feel like you dodged a bullet?
Yeah, and then there's, you know, survivor guilt that was dealt around that too. So that's why this play feels really important to me, to be able to stand. And there's a kind of a coup de théâtre that happens in it at the end of part one that really directly speaks to this. And I won't say any more about that, but it lands something in a real, very emotional way.
Danny McIver is here. We're talking about The Inheritance, parts one and two. Now, because there are AIDS themes and it's in two parts, I would imagine obvious comparisons to Angels in America.
It ain't Angels in America.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that kind of fantasia element. It's very low. Even though I show up as the enforcer from wherever I come, it's really rooted in realism.
Okay.
I mean, Brendan
has... So Boys in the Band, but not as tedious.
Yeah. Boys in the Band, but without the self-loathing.
Yes.
You know? But Brendan has put a spin on it. Brendan, who's a national treasurer, Brendan Healy, he's put a spin on it that really focuses it on what is it to tell a story? How do we tell stories? How do we find stories? Like, that's... When they did it in the L.A. and... New York and London productions, and I think even the L.A. production, did it in this kind of, you know, liminal space that was kind of sort of theatrical. But Brendan's landed it in a real theatrical space, like a physical space that's not an impression. It's a real space. And I think that roots it in a really exciting way. I describe it as the sort of third or fourth major production, but potentially the definitive one.
I read a quote from you, and you can correct me if I'm inaccurate.
Uh-oh.
But as a director and writer, you said, don't worry about honoring the text. And I listened to a podcast with David Mamet, and he said, just do the damn text.
David Mamet, David Mamet is a guy who, oh, I hate it when people got out in front of the play and start, you know, showing off. I directed a David Mamet play where he has a 10-year-old boy say this line, no, semicolon, mother. You can tell a 10-year-old to play a semicolon, you're an idiot. Anyway, talk about getting up in front of the play and doing a... Oh, excuse me, language.
That's okay, we can bleep.
Anyway, I'm not a big fan of Mamet, but... This is the thing. I, of course, we respect the text, but my philosophy is that theater is performance centered, right? It's the performance that carries the flame of the thing to the audience. And so text, design, direction, marketing, those things work together to lift performance to its center. So the text is a tool of theater, not the purpose. Now, of course, you look at Tom Stoppard. This is a person who's writing something, and it's idea-based, and its performance is not necessarily the central focus of what Tom Stoppard is doing, and that's fair. But I think the theater that excites me and the theater that I do is theater that's performance-centered.
You had this incredible collaboration with Daniel Brooks, who was supposed to be sitting in that chair. for an interview, and then they called and they said he can't make it because he was dying of cancer. But I just wonder about the nature of that kind of, it's almost like a marriage, I guess.
Yeah, like I'm brothers, yeah. You know, godfather to his kids. Like it's that, you know, that's the thing about the theater is that we, you know, we don't really understand work-life balance in the theater. That's why they have us working 6 days a week, 10-hour days. But anyway,
two shows.
Yeah. You know, where surgeons don't work so much. It's a great gift to be able to do something that matters that much, and it means, you know, like doing The Inheritance. Being in the room with these people, the team is, I'm so grateful. Daniel was the one who sort of insisted that I do the play. Originally, when it was offered to me, he said, don't do it, because I work solo most of the time. He said, you'd never handle all the eye, like it would drive you crazy with all these actors. And then he spent an evening drinking bourbon with Brendan Healy, and then he called me and said, do it. He said, it will change you.
Thank you for this.
Thank you, John.